For those of you not familiar with the Linux Trace Toolkit, what it does is enables you to see everything that's happening in the system at all times. I know you guys are probably looking for a security thing right now. So this might be actually really interesting for you guys once I get to the point where I start describing what I've done with this a little bit further. Okay, so what it does is it records all the important events that occur in a kernel, and it keeps track of those in a buffer. And then once it reaches a certain size of events, it signals a daemon and then tells them, well, I'm full, and so on. And afterwards, you can analyze what the events that have happened and look at a trace of events. And just to give you an example of what this looks like. Okay, so this is a simple example. Well, you have, for instance, the kernel at the bottom who's been running and doing some stuff, and then it switches into X, which does a system call, goes in the kernel, does some treatment, and goes back and go. And then you see the whole progression of everything that's happening in the system. And you could take a look at this in a raw form where you see all the events, one after the other, and so on and so forth. So just to give you an overview of what I've done with this, I've added a possibility to add generic hooks to events. For instance, you can tell them, well, such and such event occur, please call my function. And on top of that, I've added a state machine engine. And what you do with that is you tell them, well, this is a sequence of events. And if this sequence of events happens, please call my functions such order. So for instance, for security reasons, you could tell them, well, if some process, whatever process it is, opens this file, does such and such treatment with it, and then sends this over to the network and so on and so forth, please do kill the process. This is a simple approximation of what you can do, but you can see exactly what type of things you can do with that. And this could be extended to quite large types of problems that we have right now with systems. For instance, you wouldn't care in that case which stack of which process got corrupted. You really don't care because it's overall a schematic of a hacking that you're putting in, and you can track it down and see exactly what's happened. Okay, so if I go back to the presentation and talk a little bit about how it works and stuff. Okay. Yeah, well, the basis of this work is that conventional performance and reporting tools either give us large quantities of information about a single item or give us summarized information about the whole system. But they don't tell us anything about how the whole system evolves, how the interactions cause problems to each other, and so on and so forth. So this will solve this problem by telling us exactly what's happening. And one advantage of this is, for instance, if you have synchronization problems between processes who are communicating together, if you try to debug this with GDB, you just can't get it over, because GDB basically changes the behavior of a process. So the dynamic will change. With this, you see exactly the two processes as they evolve in their natural form, communicating together, or whatever synchronization thing you're trying to do, and you will see them actually failing to behave in the way you want them to behave, and the reason why it is happening this way. Absolutely, the measurement over here, the overhead of this happening is maximum 4.5%. And that's you're running, for instance, a graphical thing like KDE and running multiple applications, so on and so forth. But if you are trying to do just the basic events, which are system call entries, strap entries, RQs, and stuff like that, and you don't bother about stuff like file system events and so on, the maximum is 2.5. So it really depends what you're trying to track. And all this is configurable, of course. You can tell them, I want to track those events and not those ones, and I want the details of those but not those other ones. And I've actually went to quite a couple of detail in this in a paper I presented last month at the USENIX Annual Technical Conference, part of the referee track. And if you get the proceedings, that's the word I was searching for, proceedings of the USENIX conference, you'll have the article about it. And so I'll also post it on the website as soon as I try to finish up my moving, because I was moving. Okay, so a little bit about what we have as events which are reported. So this is a rundown of all the events. Right now it's a fixed list of events that you can track down. But I'm adding a possibility to add a dynamic creation of events. So you could basically tell it, well, I've got a new driver. I want to track this down. Please give me, allocate me an event ID. And then you could, the driver can forward on those events to the event driver and so on and so forth. Okay, and then we have, we got four different parts here to make this happen and work. First part is the instrument and kernel. You have to go through the whole, all of the kernel to instrument every key part of it. Otherwise, you just can't get this information. I talked to Linus about this, and he said he disliked this idea of adding stuff to it. He would have liked it if it would be compiler-generated. The only problem is that some of the stuff cannot be compiler-generated. For instance, when it tasks, which happens, indicating which one is going out and which one is coming in is quite hard to tell to any compiler. And then we have a data collection module, because now we got the data, but we have to sort somewhere. So the data collection module just takes care of that. And then you have a data committing module, which basically takes this data and puts it somewhere, whatever place you want it to be. Usually it's file system space. And then you got afterwards a data presentation software, which you've just seen, the graphs and all that stuff. So if we take a look at the flow of data between all the modules, it goes up from the Linux kernel up to the data collection module, and then into data committing module and data presentation analysis. And actually, each one of these parts is a software. For instance, like the Linux kernel part is a patch. Then the module is a driver. The data committing thing is a daemon. And the other one, well, is a user part software. Yeah, so we got three parts, basically. Okay, a little bit about the impact. Of course, as I told you, this is quite... a small discussion about it. I mean, the whole discussion about the impact, if you really want to see the thorough discussion of this, you ought to check the proceedings of the Unix conference. Okay, so as I said, in most cases, when you're tracking the core parts of the kernel, it's around 2.5%. And as for the data generated, the quantity of data generated, it's approximately 0.5 megs per second when you're tracking everything. And that's one with an X system running and all sorts of stuff running around it, like StarOffice and Netscape and so on. If you're just monitoring a plain system, what I mean by plain is you don't have any X running or anything like that of the sort, you just got a command line, you're compiling something, that'll be around 0.1 megabytes per second. And still quite a large amount of data. If you imagine, like, for 60 seconds, like a minute, of just plain system, that's like 6 megs. Which is quite large. And if you take a system that's running X, I think it was something like 30 megs, 30 megs for a minute. So you really have to know exactly what you're running to track. Okay, yeah, just so you, that's the usage a little bit. I'll do a runtime demo. It's going to be better than if I show you this stuff. Okay, just going to try to get my screen on over here. Okay, we got it. Then this one goes off. Okay, fine. I'll do it this way. Okay. You guys seeing over there? Yeah? Everybody seeing? Okay. Okay. TMP. Should have it over here. Okay, let's say I trace for 10 seconds and I put this in out. I don't know. OLS. There we go. Okay, now he's going to trace for 10 seconds everything that happens on the system. Fine. Oh, okay. Have to do this first. Perfect. Okay. Okay, fine. I know what this is. Okay, what I'll do is I'll just reboot the thing and just give me... Okay, while this is rebooting, I'll continue on. Okay, so as I said, right now I've added on top of that a capability to hook on to the events. So for instance, you can tell them, well, if this event occurs, please do call my function. And then you can what you can do with that is you write a module, a kernel module that basically hooks on to the events you want to know. And it will call your functions at the time of this event, and it calls them in an atomic manner. That means, okay, fine. You want my password? Hopefully, it gets to something. Okay. And there's no race conditions. So for instance, if you want to track when he opens /etc/shadow, well, you can do that in an atomic manner. As soon as that happens, your function will get called, and then you can do whatever you want to do with it. You could disable, you could stop the process. You can send him a kill signal or whatever it is that you want to do on top of that. And as I said, if I had a drawing board, I would have drawn it. I've added on top of that the state machine engine, which basically you can. This goes on top of that facility of hooking, and you can write a kernel module. Which has a description of a state machine, and you feed that state machine to the to the trace facility. And once you register your state machine, it will return you an ID, and in that state machine descriptions, you give addresses of your functions. And those functions will get called according to the sequence of events that you've indicated. Okay, so...
Those are kernel module
functions,
right?
No, those are functions from the trace facility. The functions that you that are called back?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, those functions are your functions from the module.
In the module,
in the module space. So you can determine whatever functions you want to put in there. You can put anything you want. Okay, so this should work. 10 seconds... out, OLS. Okay. Let's say I start X. So he's going to track X starting. So once we look at the trace, we should have the rundown of everything that happened during the startup. Well, at least the 10 seconds of it. But it's 800, 600, so we should take it. Okay. Okay, just a sec. Take this out, then start it. Okay. So in any case, he's traced the right 10 seconds. It's just a matter of starting it up the right way afterwards to show you the trace. Okay, so what it has done... when it started, it did two things. First, it started off reading /proc, and it went through all the processes and it read their PID, their parent's PID, and their command line, the command line that started executing them. And once it's done that, it opened up the trace device, which is in /dev. Should get it. Okay. Opens /dev/tracer. And then it did a couple of IOCTLs on it to set the correct things, for instance, to tell them what the size of the buffers is and so on, and tell them to track what and what event. And then it said IOCTL start, giving the start command. And from that on, it started tracking all the events that occurred. And once the 10 seconds ran out, well, the daemon had an alarm set that basically ended, and he said IOCTL stop, and stopped tracking the system. So if you take a look at everything that happened during that time, trace view out, OLS. Okay. Problem with those machines is the refresh rate is just horrible. Okay, let's go down. Okay, we get to get interesting stuff here. Okay. Did I see Big Munch? Okay. You see this? This is X. Actually, X. It says X wrapper, but it's actually X because it started X afterwards. And what you see over here is that it actually ran for so much time, as I'm zooming in right now, that it even got interrupt. It actually ran for something like 100 milliseconds. X was running for 100 milliseconds. And you can see that each time X runs, he runs for actually quite a lot of time. So that's one of the reasons why they tell you do not run a web server with X running, because it actually eats up a lot of CPU, and you can actually visualize it with that. One of the things we can see over here is that we have a thumbnail called process analysis. And if we take a look in there, come on, there we go. Okay, I logged in. it ran bash, which then I ran start x. And then you can look at everything that's been run. Okay, wrapper. Okay. I think one of those is the KDE stuff. I don't know which one it is. Okay. In any case, you can see the rundown of all the processes that ran. And one thing you can do with that, which you can't do with most profiling tools or whatever, is that you can have the exact rundown of the time that you've spent in a process. So rather than having approximation based on the clock, the system clock, which is every 10 milliseconds, you know exactly that over here you went in the process and over here you went out. So you know you spent exactly that much time in the process. Okay, and basically, well, you got all sorts of little thingies with this. Is basically, I can go down the list and tell him, well, okay, I want to see the event in the graph. So he goes, zooms in. And as you can see, you got, it is very dense. It can get very, very, very dense because there's a lot of things happening in a system. So for instance, if I try to zoom in here, I just, okay. You get page faults, so on and so forth. It gets very, very dense, and you gotta try to zoom in and out and try to do all sorts of stuff. Now, I've had a very large commercial distribution who have contacted me to add stuff to this. So one thing that's being added is real-time support. I can't give any details any further, but that's one thing that's being added. Another thing is for the visualization tool, there's a lot of things that would be really interesting to add to this. For instance, if you could put vertical markers and say, well, I want to put a marker over here and then play around and then say, okay, go back to my marker. So he resumes stuff to your marker. And then you could move around the processes and stuff like that. Okay, so how does this look, for instance, in the kernel? Yep. Okay. Just going to show you a little bit how it looks like in source form without going very much into detail. One of the things that's very, very complicated with this is to try to determine exactly what was the system doing when it came back to a process. For instance, if I could zoom in a little bit on one of those. Okay. Okay, see, over here we have a page fault. Then we know that we went in the system and came back to the process after the page fault handling was done. And if I see the raw event sequence, there was a trap entry, something happened in the memory management, then a trap exit, and then we had a system call entry afterwards. The only reason we can know that we were in a process between this event and the next one, between trap exit and the system call entry, is because the next one was a system call entry, because there are many exit points to the kernel. So trying to reconstruct exactly how it's happening is somewhat complicated. Okay, let's go. Okay. If I start showing you first an example of, for instance, what the trace things look like, the trace statements. No, it's not. It's the wrong one. This is the one. Okay. Okay, this is the stuff where the part where it starts waiting for buffers. So, for instance, you're trying to look for a file that's just not available in memory. He's got to go fetch it on the disk. So, what your process is going to do is he's going to start waiting for something. He's going to schedule it out, and then he's going to come back and redo the test one last time. And the trace statement basically just says that trace file system buffer wait start. And then you can know exactly how much time you spent waiting for a file. So this basically tells you everything about I/O, which you would be missing without this. Okay, and these macros all over the place. I'd say they're around 200, at least 100 macros, around or, at least 100 trace statements like those. And what those amount to is, okay, if I show you one of those, okay. Include Linux, yada, yada, yada. Should be something called trace.h. No, wrong one. This one. Okay. You've probably seen some of those macros around that do while zeros. And this is basically what it does. It does it adds up this portion of code to the place where you put the trace statement, and it ends up calling a function called trace event, which is a function in a trace facility I've added to the kernel, which I'll show you in just a moment. And one thing that is nice about this is if you, in the compile options, if you tell them, I don't want to have any trace, well, basically those defines end up to absolutely nothing. Define nothing. So basically you can choose whether you want it or you don't want it. It won't change the behavior of the kernel. And if we look at the trace facility, it's basically a redirect. It's basically just a unified entry point to tracing for the kernel. So it basically has a function called register tracer and so on. And it basically ends up calling at the end when you do trace event, it calls up the callback you've given it, which is the callback of the trace driver. That about sums it up. As I said, well, this solves some synchronization problems. It solves some profiling problems. For instance, PS just reports bogus times, and I've shown that in the Usenix paper. You can take a look at that. Gprof is just way off. When you try to measure some stuff, it just gives you stuff that really doesn't make sense. Even one of the tests I did is have run gprof on a little program. I think I have it over here. I'm not sure. Did I close Netscape? Oh, yes, I did. I killed the thing. I ran gprof on a portion of code and looked at what it gives me and what actually happens on the system. And these were two completely different things. Okay, and there we go. Okay. I hope I have it over here, something like that. There were two functions in the main. It called one function that did something like printfs, and the other one called schedule all the time or get time of day or something. And it ended up not calling. It ended up telling me that the whole thing ran for 250 milliseconds, while it has actually ran for 3.5 milliseconds. And then it told me that the part where it spent on printfs was like something like 800 milliseconds, and the part it spent on calling get time of day was around 75 milliseconds. Whereas with this, I was able to see that the cumulative time he had passed into the do get time of day calls was around 2.5 seconds in total. Hopefully, I have this. I hope so. Is this it? No, this is the wrong one. Ah, jeez. No, I don't have this example in my hand. Okay. That's about just it. So that's a rundown of everything I got. Right now, as I told you, I'm doing the work for the adding the state machine stuff, which will be which I have some help from people that work on security issues, which would like to have that to know exactly what's happening and really give patterns of hackings, so you can like say, well, if this pattern happened, please just stop the process or send me an email or whatever thing it is you want. Then there's real-time stuff, the graphical stuff. That's basically it. So if you want to go get the thing, it's on the web, it's GPL, the whole thing. opersys.com/LTT. Hopefully this is visible from the back. Okay, thank you. You want to get any questions? Sure.
It sounded as if Linus was a little bit cool to the idea of including these manual ones. Is that...
The thing is, what I've understood of it, I didn't have time to actually talk a lot about it because, also for circumstances, but he doesn't like to see code that generates more code in the back, which you don't actually exactly see what's happening behind it right away. I think that was the logic behind it. As I said, I didn't get enough time to talk about it fully. But I'm supposed to send him an email with a lot more detail, so it's a pending matter. It's still to be discussed.
Do you do any decimation of your data before you write it up to the daemon?
What happens is the filtering happens at the driver level, so the driver can be instructed to ignore certain types of events or to ignore the details of the events. So you can know the event occurred without knowing its details. But the filtering actually happens one time. So, yes? Question back? No? You had a question? Yeah? What? Excuse me?
This is trace kind of dialect kernel. But
yes.
Can it be integrated with something like L-trace to get library calls out of this?
One thing that I've wanted to add, I've got so many ideas, I just don't have time to do them, is add user-side events, for which you could basically just open the device and dump events into it. So I guess that would fit in there, or an extension of it. Yes? No, absolutely not. You can run the analysis on any machine. It's just that the daemon has to be running on the machine where you're doing the trace. But afterwards, you can copy this edit wherever you want and do it on any other machine. No, it's a patch. It's a kernel patch. Yeah, the thing about patches when it's not in the main kernel is you have to update the patch as the kernel evolves, which is somewhat very hectic to keep up because, I mean, just the beat of the releases is just awful. It's too fast. So what I've done is I have a patch out for 2.2.14, which was quite a stable kernel, and I haven't done any patches from that time. But if you'd like to have it for a certain version that you're using, you could just basically go through it and see exactly what it does. And it's quite straightforward, the patching stuff. But eventually, I'd like it to be included in the kernel, but it all depends on the developers themselves. There was a question over there? Okay, what was your question? Yes?
Any 2.3
work? No, yes. Actually, yes. 2.3.26, I think I had a patch for it. But I haven't updated that patch to the latest kernel. What I'm doing is I'm waiting for 2.4.0, which might be the wrong tactic, to do a patch for that, update the patch from 2.3.36 to that version.
Was the subnet already there?
Was the what?
If it was,
I hadn't traced it, but I should add the tracing to that once it's up for the 2.4 or 3.0. For test. You just had a question?
Does it work on SMB machines?
Yes, it works on... Excuse me?
Do the tools correlate activity?
Okay, one thing you have in the... Okay, if I can get it to not crash, please. No, I'm talking about KDE now. Okay, you got on the left column, there's a CPU ID. So basically what it does is if you tell the driver to record CPU IDs, it just records the CPU ID and it's basically straightforward effort, but the the graph thing does not draw multiple CPUs. If you give it an SMP trace, it will just trace CPU zero, CPID zero. One thing that I've wanted to add is right now it's one buffer, so when you try to write to the buffer, it uses pin lock, and basically if you got four CPUs, well, they're all locked. So what I will eventually add is as many buffers as there are CPUs. Yes? Oh, yes, that was a problem. I had a problem because right now what happens is those buffers are being mapped in the daemon, so the daemon doesn't read. So he just writes once. It's mmapped. One problem I've had till now is I was using _ get free pages, which Stefan Tweedy told me was a wrong idea, and that I should be using vmalloc. But the buffers are variable sizes, and you can determine what size you want. The default is one is... Actually, I'm using double buffering, so it's two buffers of 1 meg each right now. Yes?
Has anyone expressed interest in using the instrumentation for other things, such as policy-based dispatching or resource allocation?
Could you elaborate? What do you mean by policy? What do you mean by policy?
Fair scheduling, different schedulers to...
Okay, one thing that I've speculated on in my Usenix paper is that you could use this, given how exact the data are you could use that to enforce policy. So for instance, you could say, well, that process should not run for more than X percent of the CPU and so on. And you could do that because you have precise data, not approximate data, which would be hard to do with approximate. Well, it would be unfair to do with approximate data. Does that answer your question? Yeah? There was a question in the back. No? Yeah? The timestamps, I use a Dugger time of day, which has microsecond precision on a Pentium and so on. It ends up using the TSC. So it's the timestamps are microsecond. And some of these events have follow each other by quite a small amount of time, and you can actually see that the maximum time it takes to record an event is less than a microsecond. So it's quite small. One thing that I've been suggested is to add the analysis. This was a debate on the kernel meaningless. Given the precision you have with this, it would be nice to have this as data for PS. But the only problem with this is that the overhead of this is linear with the number of events. It's not flat. So the more events you have, the more overhead you have. So. One thing that I've suggested is, okay, well, some people don't want that, and some people do want that, so it would be nice to have the option of choosing between both of them. So that was one thing that came up. Yes? As it's being captured, or... No, displaying it as it's being captured is a little bit hard, because you have so much data of arriving that if you want to display it as it's arriving, you're going to create more events than it's already displaying. Yeah, that's another option. But right now I don't have support to send it over to something else. But it would eventually be nice to be able to send this whatever wire you have, a serial or Ethernet or whatever, and display it right away in another machine. But if you take a look at, for instance, the bar on top, these are milliseconds, okay? Milliseconds, and these are the quantities of events occurring. If you want to display those in runtime, humanly speaking, it doesn't mean anything. We don't have the bandwidth, but the statistics mean something. If the statistics were generated in runtime, it would be nice to see them on another machine. But as for the events, I don't see any use to have this runtime. Other than having, for instance, what I call breakpoints, something like breakpoints, where you tell me if this event occurs, please just signal me on the screen or something. So, but it will eventually be there.
If the events are repetitive, then you could think of an oscilloscope as a model of a display for this kind of thing.
Yes.
Oscilloscopes display things that take a very short period of time potentially.
One thing that I've been asked to add to this is a delta between events. So, for instance, it would give you not only the timing right now. You see timestamps for each event, but what I'd add is another column which would give you the delta between this event and the event corresponding to it. So, for instance, between trap entry and trap exit, the trap exit would have the time from the last entry, and the trap entry would have the event the time between it and the previous trap entry. Sorry. Yes. Yeah, you could do that too. One thing that's going to be done with the state machine I've talked about a little bit earlier is dynamically set the mask, the tracing mask. So you could basically tell it, well, okay, now just please disable this and re-enable this further and so on. But one thing you already have right now is to tell them, I just want to track this PID. So it records events for just that PID. Yes? Okay.
They've recently open sourced most of that, but the visualization tools for that data are still proprietary.
I was actually contacted by somebody at IBM who had said in an article about Linux's behavior with Java, I think, that they had a tool that did stuff like that. So I contacted the guy. And he speculated that he would open source it and stuff. Contacted the guy and he said, well, this tool has been internal for so-and-so number of years. Actually, they have this for a long time. but it was never open sourced. And eventually he told me, well, I have to talk with the lawyers, and I never got news from him again. So. Okay. If you could try to find it, I'll check it out. I know Sun had something called the TNF format, which did some of the stuff that actually somebody at Usenix remarked on this, is that this kind of tool is not actually new. There's a lot of tools that do this, but there's none of them that are open source out there, and there's been documented and so on. And Sun had one of those, which basically did some stuff like that, and then you could have an analysis tool that would dump it in text and so on and so forth. Actually, this can dump it in text. The same executable that dumps that displays it in graph mode can be used to generate it in text mode to tell them, well, I want just these events or those events and so on. Yes? No, but the thing is, this actually should be run from root. So if you're root, one thing that you would do, I'd assume, is tell them, well, I want the trace daemon to be unkillable. And that's quite easily achievable, is that you could design a state machine that says any process that sends a kill signal to the trace daemon should be killed itself. And this will work. The trace daemon will be unkillable, so you can track everything. He would never be able to disable it. No, but that would be something that the root user could set. So, for instance, he could say, "Well, I don't want any process to have the right to set its own tracing stuff," and in that case, nothing could be corrupted. And if you implement that, plus the fact that you don't never kill the trace daemon, I mean, that's bulletproof in my sense. Any more questions, suggestions? I mean, this is ongoing work, and the thing that I've found displeasant about this is that I'm working on it alone, so anybody that wants to suggest stuff is just welcome to do it. Yes?
I see my question before about the higher tiers. I've seen that there is that bottom half.
Yeah.
You have instrumented the bottom half?
Yeah, the bottom half has been inserted, yeah.
Changed a lot of it.
Yes, I know that it from 2.2 to 2.4, the bottom half has been generalized to softwire queues and different species of those.
And I think that this is an area where this would be very useful because it would help the bottom half.
Yeah, that would be very useful. One thing that I've tried to make an emphasis on is this is not a kernel debugger per se. There are kernel debuggers out there, but this can be used by other people than just kernel developers. I mean, if for the example's sake, if you have, as I said, synchronization problem, if you're trying to use GDB on that, it just won't work. And that's a basic user space problem, which this can help solve, which is not basically, just kernel problem. It's really your user side problem. Okay, well, thank you. Okay, well, the presentation is already on the websites on the website of the project. This presentation, the presentation I did, the little slides. Yeah, it's www.opersys.com/LTT, and LTT is in caps.
I noticed in your code, your while macros had a semicolon at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually you debug the semicolons or you use the while 6 basic.
Okay.
If you say if, macro or whatever, and then you put a semicolon at the end, then you put it like else after that.
Oh, yes, true. Okay.
So,
thanks.
I missed your...
the URL.
Yeah.
I'll put that back. I'm sorry.
So how much trouble do you think it'd be to put it to the
herd? Actually, Richard Tallman asked me about that. And with the new version that's coming out,
for which I've added support for other operating systems, it should be fairly easy to add that. So I've actually thought about working on that, but I've got so much stuff to work on that I just can't give it time. But if somebody wants to do it, I'll gladly help them.